The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, Bob engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to Buckmaster for Thursday, July the 25th, 2019. You know, a couple of rains does not make a summer rainy season, and that's basically what it's been. We have had, at our place up in Central Foothills, two rains, both of maybe a half-hour duration. And that's it, folks. That is monsoon 2019 in a nutshell. 31 years here in town, this has got to be the weirdest, latest start to a summer rainy season. Jim Cantrell, have you ever seen anything like it?
Well, I've only been here 12 years, and yeah, they're all kind of weird for me.
They all are weird. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Also, we have quite an active Facebook following. You can check us out there. We're on Twitter. All of our podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Live line number 790-2040. We're going to be talking space with Jim Cantrell of Vector. So if folks have any questions for Jim, 790-2040. Jim Cantrell is an American entrepreneur. He's a mechanical engineer. He's a road racer. He is CEO and co-founder of Tucson-based Vector Launch Incorporated. After working at the French Space Agency and the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Jim Cantrell worked as an independent consultant to aerospace companies for 15 years and was on the founding teams of SpaceX and Moon Express. Vector was launched here in Tucson in 2016. It's now a let's put it this way, maybe $300 to $400 million company that develops micro satellites designed to connect space startups and innovators with affordable and reliable space access. Jim, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Bill.
We like to bring you in every 6 months or so to kind of get an update, and we will do that about what Vector's been doing. But what you've been doing, you've been away for a while. You were up in the Arctic Circle in Scandinavia. What was going on up there?
Yeah, I was up looking at a launch site that I was at when I was a student back in the mid-80s. It's called S-Range, which is a sounding rocket site that normally they don't launch into space, don't stay there. They go up for maybe 15 minutes of microgravity. So they want to launch satellites into orbit, and that's one of the places that we're scouting out as a potential future launch site for our Vector rockets, which would service the European community. They really want to launch out of Europe, and that's the only launch site that's in Europe at the moment.
Most of the European activity is out of French Guiana, isn't it?
That's correct. And yeah. That's South America.
And they get, in French Guiana, they like being closer to the equator. Isn't there some kind of an advantage? I've read that.
Yeah, so yeah. If you watch satellite TV, those satellites that are broadcasting to you are in what's called geostationary orbit. Mm-hmm. And those are so far out, they seemingly hang over the same place on Earth, so you don't have to repoint your antennas all the time. So that is a equatorial orbit, which means you really have to launch from the equator. So that's the main reason why French Guiana was chosen back in the 60s as a launch site for the French, and then it became the Europeans as a whole. And you can launch to any orbit on Earth, around the Earth, rather, from that point. But if, say, you go from Florida, you have to do some tricky maneuvers to get into geostationary orbit.
Give our listeners the kind of 30,000-foot view of Vector. People perhaps have not heard about it. Give us about a one-minute pitch about what you guys are all about.
Sure. We're some of the original guys from SpaceX. I had a role in that, was there for a year, and some of the other Vector co-founders and I originally thought we ought to build small rockets, and Elon wanted to build big rockets, and he's doing a good job at that, and they keep getting bigger and bigger all the time. There's a market for the very small ones because satellites, in that intervening 18 years since we started SpaceX, have gotten smaller. So you imagine satellites the size of a loaf of bread are now doing the equivalent of a satellite the size of a car. And so the market for launching these smaller ones requires smaller launch vehicles. So what we're doing is we're marrying really the art of building cars in some sort of limited production manner with rockets to get the price down on these rockets. Kind of like what Henry Ford did for the automobile. Yeah, we chuckle, but it's really, mm-hmm. at the time of the turn of the century, cars and then your dollars were $8,000, which was a lot of money. And Henry Ford had this radical idea to build a car for the common person for $200 to $300. And that's what we're doing with rockets.
And tell us about your operation in Tucson.
So, yeah, we're a company split in actually three locations. Our headquarters here in Tucson, engineering's in Huntington Beach, California, and our software group's up in Silicon Valley for the satellite side. Tucson's the sort of the lift horse part of the company where manufacturing's done on the rockets. And we're here because the labor pool here is perfect for it. The cost is good. The weather for our testing, we have a test site up in Pinal County, is excellent, except for when we have, these monsoons that we actually have the last 2 days. You said yes. That we've been rained out up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We hit really hard yesterday.
Okay.
But it's kind of spotty, I guess.
Yeah.
So at any rate, we're here because it's the right place to be. The governor loves us. The locals love us. We've gotten a lot of investment dollars out of the local community. So we like to make sure we give that love back to the community.
And you're employing how many people right now, the footprint?
Yeah, we're about 160 people, and mm-hmm. about 80 of those are here in Tucson. So.
And what are they making specifically here in Tucson?
So we're making rockets here, and
okay.
we're making rocket parts, and we're making all the infrastructure that goes with the rockets. So these mobile launchers that'll go all over the world to launch our rockets. That's all done right here in Tucson with local labor.
It's a privately held company.
Correct. Yes.
So you have local investors and probably investors. I know you have some big time investors.
Sure.
Sequoia over in the Silicon Valley is on board.
Right.
You have, is it Morgan Stanley?
Morgan Stanley is one of our major investors.
Wow.
Yeah, we have Lightspeed. We have Shasta. We have Draper Nexus. So we have, sort of a superstar list of investors plus a superstar list of local investors.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're real pleased with the local support that's come out of this. And that's been one of the real heartening parts of the story for me is to see how the local communities rallied around us.
Let's talk about the rocket. You have a big test coming up, right, in Georgia, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Camden, Georgia. Right.
What's that about?
So we're testing a rocket. It's what we call our Block 1. That may not mean much to mm-hmm. your listeners, but think of it as a prototype for the ultimate car, if you will. This is our ultimate rocket. So it's built like the production version needs to be built, and we're going to go test it. We're only going to fly it a short distance because one of the things you find out when you look at rocket companies, their first two or three usually fail. And they usually fail because you try to cram too much stuff into the first flight. So we're just accepting that we're going to do a more limited objective and be a success at that. So we're going to go up, maybe 20, 30,000 feet. And you get through probably 85% of your technical objectives. You certainly get to manufacture the real vehicle and so forth. And it just becomes a less costly way to do that. So that will happen in September. And then about a year and 3 or 4 months later, we're looking to launch our orbital rocket.
So talk me through, Jim Cantrell, of Vector, how it would work. The payload would be a very small satellite, correct?
Correct.
A company would come to you and say, Jim, we want to put this particular satellite into orbit, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So you would then get that payload up into orbit. Are they reusable rockets?
So at the moment, they're not.
Okay.
So we essentially have a different business model from, say, SpaceX, who reuses their rockets.
Right.
Ours are mass-manufactured throwaways, and that's how we have a different economic model. It can be cost competitive. We get the cost down through mass manufacturing. Eventually, we see ourselves being reusable for probably more ecological arguments, plus, we're dumping them in the sea, so there's actually a liability of these things floating around in the ocean. If you're ever out on the sea in a boat, these cargo containers that come off cargo ships are a real danger floating just above the surface. So
mm-hmm.
we see a day when we're going to have to actually be reusable.
Mm-hmm. But you are able to keep your costs down by doing what, Jim?
So it's simple mass manufacturing. So by mass, we mean 100 or 200 a year. We get a huge savings on our supply chain. When people make 100 of something versus one, the cost comes down dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
This is called learning curve. And by having this economics of scale, we can drop our cost from our first unit to our 100th unit by 65%.
This may sound like a stupid question, but when it comes to things about science and space, I guess there are no stupid questions,
none,
right, Jim?
None.
How many satellites are orbiting right now?
That's a great question. So I think the last I read, it was something on several tens of thousands. I don't
really
know the exact number. Yeah, there's a lot of them up there. Not all of them are active.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of objects that are much higher number than that.
Space junk.
Yeah, so-called space junk. Some, you know, in the old days, the Soviets and Americans would launch stuff up, and you'd have, you know, deployments, and that stuff would, you know, nuts and bolts, and mm-hmm. there's even paint flecks, and there's all sorts of stuff that's up there. So some orbits, that stays for hundreds of years, and then mm-hmm. some of them, it stays for days, and some for weeks, and some for, you know, single-digit years. So the Earth does a good job of cleaning some of that stuff up.
And the stuff falls and burns up
yeah.
in the atmosphere?
Yeah, it burns up. If you see shooting stars at night, sometimes that's actually a re-entering satellite or space debris. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the live line. Matthew has called us at 790-2040. Go ahead, Matthew. You're with Jim Cantrell.
Yeah, Jim, I'm a huge fan of Vector, what it's doing for Tucson. Other companies are following you here. Recently, General Selva indicated the interest of the Pentagon to basically take advantage of these miniature satellites. And my question is, with regards to, you know, you said SpaceX, their concept of reusable rockets. Have you explored a factor of besides just quantity, but also the ability to reuse technology via the rockets being recaptured? Just curious, and what else you're working on. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So let's talk about reusability first. So our rockets, as it turns out, are inherently reusable because, you know, when we started, I actually bought a company, Garvey Space, who, you know, goes back to the original days of SpaceX, and he was a cheap SOB, and he would fly these out in the desert, and he actually made them reusable because he couldn't afford to build another one, right? He was bootstrapping his way through, and so that's kind of an irony, but to get them back safely is really the problem, right? You mm-hmm. can parachute them back, you can aerial recovery, or you can fly them back and land them like Elon did. It turns out our crew was some of the original guys that were doing that before SpaceX, landing rockets on their flames. So that's a technological investment you have to make that's not in our critical path right now. And so we don't know which way the recovery would be. But really, it's not justifiable economically at this point. And the easier thing to do is mass production. That's why we have small. In the case of SpaceX, why are they doing that? Well, really, it's to get their flight rate up. And they can only manufacture so many of these big, gigantic beasts. And if you ever see one, you stand next to one, you kind of get it. It's like building a house, which is the case of a Vector rocket, versus a skyscraper, which is the case of a SpaceX rocket. So skyscrapers don't get built in a month, but, you know, I could get a nice crew and get together and build a house in a month. So those are two really separate economic models, and they really, to get their cost down, they have to rely on that. And other things we're working on at Vector, we've come out of the closet, I guess, if you want to say, out of stealth mode on our software-defined satellites. So we think that the future is actually digital in space. And so we're all about space infrastructure, launch being one part of it. The other is software that can be uploaded on satellites, and users can create apps that get uploaded just like the iTunes store.
All right. We'll talk more with Jim Cantrell. But, Jim, right now I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. I don't know, Jim, if you've been up to, I don't know what part of town you live in, but I don't
East
know.
Side.
Well, okay. It's not that far, but Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. If you're looking for outstanding pastries, Jim, do you like bakery goods?
Oh, I love it.
Well,
yeah.
There you go. Check out Mona's Danish Bakery, open each morning now at 6:30 for breakfast. They're open right now for lunch. My goodness, the sandwich that you will be served, that bread came out of the oven just a few hours ago, and there's a wide variety of breads to choose from. I like to do breakfast up there with the ham and eggs and the hash browns, and then go to the bakery case, Jim, for one of their famous almond croissants. How does that sound right about now?
It sounds lovely. Sounds like I should probably be careful about how much I go there.
There you go. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Also a link to at BuckmasterShow.com. Not only to Mona's, but all of the great partners that make our operation here possible. We've been doing our radio show since 2011, and without our partners, well, we wouldn't be doing the radio show. Please give them your support. More with Jim Cantrell after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, FlowersRieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at Picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's Picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. Appropriate bump music. Everybody's talking. That's what we do here on Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk in Tucson. Jim Cantrell is with us. Jim is the CEO and co-founder of Tucson-based Vector Launch Incorporated. They've got so many things going on here. Pretty good size footprint in Tucson, 160 employees, a company that's really worth up to maybe $400 million. They've got a launch coming up in Georgia in a couple of months. What influence, Jim, did the moon landing, Apollo 11, have on you? You were a very young kid when that happened.
Yeah, I can remember sitting on my grandfather's lap and watching Neil Armstrong, you know, walk on the moon. I couldn't conceive of what that meant, but I remember it. And I think later, you know, as I got into engineering and that, this became really the inspiration for my generation, which was to carry on that legacy of Apollo. And, you know, sort of the frustration with the way NASA turned out, and I think, you know, Vietnam and how it rolled out and all the things that happened in America after that really sort of led to where we're at today, which is a lot of us just going out and saying, well, to hell with it. We're just going to do it ourselves. And so what you see is this vibrant space economy developing, much in the same way, I guess, our ancestors left the old world for the new world, got on boats and sailed across the seas. You know, we're thinking of doing the same things on our own without government assistance. So that's really the bottom line with Apollo. It was for everybody, I think, a great inspiration for us.
What's the next step for us as a planet as we look toward, you know, this seems to be a controversy between moon. Do we need to go to the moon before we go to Mars? What's your thinking, Jim Cantrell?
Oh, you go to both, right?
Go to both, right.
Yeah, you can go to both. Yeah. There's reasons to go to both places. Going to Mars is hard. You go to the moon because it's easier. It is not easy. It's easier. And I don't think that the technologies are fundamentally different. So you plan on both. And what's next is really, you know, the economy is driving us out further into space. We're starting to use space. You don't realize that your phone that you have in your hand is using space data. It's called GPS. And aspects of our life rely on space that we don't even know. That will continue to get more and more pervasive as time goes on. And what we're going to start to see then is private human beings going out into space. And they will look a lot like the explorers that followed Christopher Columbus to the New World, who came and set up, you know, things that they had no idea how they would turn out, where they would go, how they would make a living. That's what we're going to see. And that is, to me, the most significant thing about the Apollo anniversary is that is Christopher Columbus landing in the New World times 100.
Will private enterprise beat government enterprise to Mars?
Every day of the week.
How soon could something like that happen?
Well, that's a really great question. Mm-hmm. I think we have the technical capability of getting there right now. So it was very clear to me with my early days with Elon Musk that was really what he was all about. I mean, when he first said he wanted to build rockets himself, I mean, this was 20 years ago, and people would put you in an insane asylum for saying that too many times. But he also had Mars-based plans that, you know, he had people working on, and I would tell Elon, hey, this is like aliens, you know, put that away. We got enough trouble saying we're going to build rockets. So it's pretty clear he wants to do this. I personally believe that that's one of his personal goals. He's come out and said it. So I think SpaceX will do it as soon as it becomes, you know, easy enough financially for him to carry off.
How is your relationship with Mr. Musk?
You know, I haven't talked to him since his early days at Tesla, and he's gotten too busy, and I guess mm-hmm. I am too, to talk. Mm-hmm.
At one time, were you very close?
Pretty close, yeah. I spent a lot of time with him and his first wife, Justine, still friends with her, and went to Russia a lot of times with him. You know, spent a good year and a half with Elon, you know, on the inside of his organization. But once you leave, you know, you're either with him or not with him. So I wasn't.
Getting back to micro satellites, what is that market like? In other words, are there enough clients for you?
Oh, it's an extremely strong market right now. The launch demand for these small satellites is so large that, you know, we can sell out 10 years supply if we have a rocket that we can prove works. So our competitors that have gotten to orbit already are sold out for years in advance. So it's a matter of how quickly can you scale up, which is why we're focused on mass manufacturing.
Okay, one of our callers who did not want to go on the air, that's fine. Bob Dio relaying the question, how easy for China or Russia to take out our GPS satellites or any other country for that matter that could hurt us? I think they're probably referring to kind of a cyber warfare type thing, right?
Space warfare.
Space warfare.
Yeah, space warfare is nothing new, by the way. Public knowledge of it is. You know, the Soviets and the Americans in the 80s both tested ASAT weapons, and I think the Soviets had stuff as early as the 70s. So, you know, the Chinese, we know, tested January 11th, 2007. And the Indians did it recently. So, and actually our friends here at Raytheon did something similar with an SM-3 about 2008 or 2009, where they converted it to hit a satellite. So the capability's there. The question then becomes a geopolitical cost for the attacker. Mm-hmm. And so this is the whole reason why the various Pentagon interests are looking at these small satellites. What you want to do is to create a deterrence to this attack. And that one of those deterrences is it's much more expensive for you to attack it than it is for us to replace it. Mm-hmm. So GPS is very vulnerable. It's far more vulnerable to be jammed locally mm-hmm. than it is to take the satellite out. The satellites are pretty far up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's, I forget how many of them there are, 40 or something. So to jam it is a problem we deal with daily in the military. Mm-hmm. And I don't, there's enough other Chinese and European constellations. Most of these devices are starting to use multiples. So it would be, I think, hard as a consumer to see a massive effect on that, except for GPS-only devices.
Quickly running out of time with Jim Cantrell. It always goes so fast, so many issues to talk about and so many subjects, because Jim is kind of a Renaissance man, and we haven't talked at all about his road racing. How are you doing? With your Porsches.
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of endurance racing recently. We've got a Porsche 997 that we put in, and we won a number of races last year. Daytona, we won an endurance race there, and Road America, and got a historic race at the Monterey Historics. There's 100,000.
Sure, Monterey track.
Yep. Every year, the biggest historic race in the world, I'll be driving in it this year.
And you love the Porsche.
I love Porsches, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is it about the 997?
It's such a balanced machine. Mm-hmm. It feels like an extension of your body.
Mm. All right. We'll leave it right there. Jim, where can people find out more about Vector? You'd want to direct folks to your website.
Yeah, vector-launch.com.
Okay. We will catch up with you down the road, and we appreciate what you're doing, Jim.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be here.
Jim Cantrell, always a great guest for us here on The Buckmaster Show, Midway Point, on our Thursday edition on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news talk. We'll take our break right here, be back with the second half hour of Buckmaster. Lots of interesting issues to talk with right after this. Talk about.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies, as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare. by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to this great area of the Land of Enchantment, the southwest corner. Many of these people have lived in Tucson all their lives. They've never been over there to Silver City. You have a treat if you go over there. It's a mile-high elevation. That means anywhere from 5 to 7,000 feet. The nights are going to be cooler, certainly. The days, too, probably about 10 degrees cooler than the Tucson area, so that's a great reason in itself to visit Silver City. So many recreation opportunities and great places to stay. Visit southwestnewmexico.org as a starting place for your trip over to Silver City. We're going to take a trip on the live line now and be joined by one of our great contributors to the Buckmaster Show, more than two dozen experts in their field, people we are honored that appear regularly on the program. One of them, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's also the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District and one-time Arizona top school superintendent of the year. Quite an honor for Dr. Hendricks. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill, and how about yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. What in the world is this about the SATs now have something called an adversity score? What in the world's going on there, Bob?
Well, it's very complex. And it clearly, college admissions is really at a crossroads. You know, for years, there were two key factors for getting into college. One was the standardized test score. We're all familiar with that. And we know if we've had teenagers, we know that they fret about taking the SAT or the ACT. So that's been one factor. And the other is grade point average. But colleges really have a dilemma because, for example, according to a recent study, half of American teenagers now graduate with an A average.
What was that? An
yes,
A?
You heard it. You heard me correctly. Half graduate with an A average. And so there's no accurate way to compare the rigor of high schools issuing these grades. But the grade point average has always been the time-honored metric that colleges would use. So you can really pretty much throw that out as something that, you know, might be a consideration, but no longer a major consideration in the, you know, the landscape of admission standards. So you add that to a record number of students that are now applying for college spots and the limited number of spots available, and you can see why universities have a real dilemma. And we've talked before on the show about the real pressure to increase enrollment, particularly of low-income and first-generation students. And colleges, in their latest trend, have tried to move away from the standardized test. And now there's, I'm going to say there's over 1,500 colleges nationwide that are moving away from the standardized test. They've essentially said, we're not going to use the ACT or the SAT as a major decision point, and we're going to use interviews and essays more as a bona fide criteria. However, the majority of colleges still use a standardized test, and that leads me to your question as to what the latest controversy is, and it's called the adversity score. And this is how it works. The College Board, who administers the SAT, the Scholastic Aptitude Test, has created a new score category that's going to weigh an evaluation of the student's neighborhood, the high school they attended, and their family environment. Essentially, they put all of this data, you know, into a matrix, factors such as neighborhood crime, where the student lives, poverty rates, and students' family circumstances, which would include collecting the student's family income, their education level, the marital status of parents. And all of this is indexed into a score. And essentially, the way it works is the higher the score, the more difficult the student's circumstance. And so if you have a high score on this adversity matrix, it's going to weigh heavily on your student's chance of admission.
Wow.
So not all colleges or universities are using this, but if they're going to use the SAT as the instrument in their criteria, this score is now going to be available to them, and if they want to use it, they can. Critics have been really hitting the airwaves on this because they're calling it social engineering. Essentially, what colleges are doing is when they're pressed to make these application decisions, they're relegating the decision-making to this third-party test maker, and they're sidestepping their own accountability in the admission process, in my opinion, because they are now saying, we're gonna look at this adversity factor, and if the number's high, you're going to weight this into the admissions process, and we're going to give those students more of an advantage for admission into college.
Bob, let me add something here. I mean, do they actually go into the student's health, mental and physical? Is that also a component?
No, it is not. No.
Good.
No, but it could be. You should never say never in these circumstances. But, no, basically what they're doing is they're looking at the demographics of where the student lives by zip code. And you can go into the census with the zip code, and you can get a lot of data that you can put into the formula based on the crime rate, the poverty rate. You can look at high schools, and you can look at the free and reduced lunch data, which is a major deciding factor on the wealth or poverty of a school. So you can look at that, and then you can look at the personal circumstances of the family. Is the student a first-generation student to go to college? Is there poverty in this family's background?
Wow.
I mean, there are a lot of things to look at. And all of these get literally put into an article I read, literally get put into a black box.
Oh, my goodness.
And no one is really, really clear as to how the number pops up. But we know that there's algorithms that are used, data algorithms that are implemented to come up with this magic score. And the score could well be a factor in whether a student gets in or not.
All right.
Now, what the critics are really saying is, that's not really very hands-on. It doesn't seem very fair. And in fact, there are a few other wrinkles. And here are some circumstances, for example. A lot of folks in Tucson are familiar with magnet schools. TUSD has had magnet schools for a number of years. If you attend a magnet school, the demographics of that school may not reflect your personal demographics. However, your score is going to be assigned to where you go to school.
Wow. Bob, I'm going to interrupt you because Russ has been patiently waiting with a quick question for you. Go ahead, Russ.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I just finished a career of teaching communication at the university. And what I've noticed, the whole key is, in my personal opinion, then I have a question, is the ability to write. I had some kids that came out with a 4.0 from high school. They get there, they couldn't write a paragraph. I could tell what kind of high school a kid went to by the ability they had to write an essay. I think we should put a lot of really emphasis on the essays and the writing ability, because that's the only thing that's going to guarantee success.
Hmm.
Because grade inflation has really gotten out of hand. My question
And Russ, they've tried in the standardized tests to add a component that would look at writing ability. Unfortunately, it's very labor intensive to score that, and multiple choice tests are much cheaper to administer.
All right, Russ.
And so it really hasn't worked very well.
Russ, what's your question, real quickly?
My question is, how is this going to play out in the next 10 years? Are kids going to decide not to go to college because the economy for them might be better. I pay a plumber a lot more than my colleagues were making. So I think there might be an emphasis that college isn't should be that important. Anyhow, I'll close off the air.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your comments.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up. So your final thought, Bob, I've got about 30 seconds.
Well, my final thought, Bill, is that I think it's certainly important that we take a look at first-generation students, and we look at students who maybe have some disadvantages and want to give them the opportunities to go to college. But I think it's going to be really important that colleges not relegate the responsibilities of that to a single score on a test.
All right.
And that they're going to have to look at the data themselves and make some individual decisions. I don't think it takes colleges off the hook to do that. They're going to have to spend the personal time and energy in looking at each student and make a fair decision.
Thank you very much, Robert Hendricks. Dr. Bob Hendricks, thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, Bill.
Bob Hendricks, the contributor on education on the Buckmaster Show. Green Things, one of our great sponsors, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful 13-acre site for all of your plant needs. And now Zocalo, all that great merchandise, handmade, beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, part of the five shops at Zocalo Village. Green Things, AZ.com, a good starting place, or just drop by. Check it out for yourself. A great location over on East River Road by the Brandy Fenton Park. We'll be right back on Buckmaster 1030, The Voice, trusted local news talk.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamori.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk. And that's a word we're going to be exploring a little more in depth about trust. There's a new poll out showing that doctors, teachers, members of the military, even scientists are viewed more positively than the clergy. The less frequently people attend church, the more negative their views. Among those who attend less than once a month, only 42% said they have a positive view of clergy members, a rate comparable to that of lawyers, who rank near the bottom of the list of professions. But the frequent church attendees still hold clergy in high regard. About 75% viewed them positively. Let's get the views now of Father Mark Schultz, who is the curate for children and families at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Father Mark, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here, Bill. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your initial, when you saw this survey, what were you thinking?
Oh, golly. There's a lot of good reason, I think, for that lack of distrust, particularly recently in the news. You have clergy sexual abuse scandals. And I think you have also a sense that that people are not practicing what they preach. There's a lot of fear of hypocrisy in the clergy. There's a lot of lack of distrust or lack of trust that comes from that. So that's where I sort of went when I was looking at this to begin with. And then I thought there are also other things. There are other reasons why there might be this distrust. And some of the articles that I've read about it touch on that. Some of them might be that a decline in trust in experts, right? Mm-hmm. And also the proliferation of access to the internet and information that's on the internet. I think in one of the articles that I read, it was you could go online and find Google. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. Google your answers. If you have a question about anything, you can become your own expert in any particular thing. And that, to me, speaks to a broader mm-hmm. issue. And that broader issue is a kind of decay, not so much of trust in clergy specifically, but a decay in trust of communities mm-hmm. largely. A sense that we can do it on our own. We can practice our spirituality without a community, and that to me is worrisome. I don't know that you can actually practice a religion without relationship to a community of practice, without falling into a kind of solipsism. So I think there's a lot going on in this in this study and in the lack of clergy or lack of trust in clergy.
I think by its very nature, when we talk about religion generally, you're talking about, you know, this kind of if you start thinking, well, I'm going to practice religion individually mm-hmm. and I don't need community. And there are people, I'm sure, that have gone that
yeah.
way, who consider themselves a very spiritual people.
Absolutely.
A spiritual person who feels, for whatever reason, that they don't need community.
Mm-hmm.
Address how important community is to the religious experience.
Yeah. I think the religious experience really does come out of community. Yes, there has been a decline of trust in institutions. One of these articles talked about a decline of trust in institutions generally since the 70s. At the same time, I don't think that we can become the people we are meant to be, the people that we are called to be, without a community that is, A, holding us account to a particular set of values, or B, forming us into those people. I don't think that who and what we are is kind of a sui generis thing. We don't arrive as ourselves without people forming us, without people loving us, without the challenges of community. So I think community is actually very, very, very important to what it means to be a human being. I think in the religious sense of things, a community of practice in which there are various practices, and I'm thinking in terms of the church, the practices of virtue, practices of the sacraments, all of these various practices of prayer, all of those things, all of these practices, they're done in relationship with community. They're done in relationship with tradition. Even if you don't agree with that tradition, they're still done in relationship with that tradition. And I think that's very important in a deeply formative sense.
And someone who feels they've got a problem that normally they would have taken to the clergy, Father Mark, and now they Google it.
Yeah.
Or figure, well, you know, I've got this problem, whatever it is, maybe I can get an answer on the internet. There is something about a human contact, is there not, Father Mark, about coming to you or a clergy member or someone, at least bouncing an issue off of someone?
Absolutely, there is. I think when we're alone, again, we... In terms of making choices, there are anchor biases, there are various biases that we have, and we can sort of argue our way back into our various biases. But if there's actually someone, a relationship, that contact with someone, they can challenge those biases. That might not be particularly comfortable. I mean, one of the things that was talked about in one of the articles is that, you know, people don't go to clergy for financial advice. Well, I'm not qualified to give anyone specific financial advice.
Right.
But my job, in part, is to tell them what Jesus says about our resources, how we use our resources, how we use those things that we possess without them possessing us, what it means to give, what it means to be in relationship with others, and see that the things that we possess are actually things that we hold in trust for others, for future generations, etc. That I'm bound to say, and that might come across to some people as somewhat uncomfortable. So they might not want to come to me for specific financial advice.
Father Mark Schultz is with us, the curate for children and families at St. Philip's in the Hills. Paul has called us on the live line at 790-2040, and he has a question for Father Mark. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, thank you. A comment. I'd like to know if he agrees with it, but I'm getting rather elderly now, and I've lived all over the country, and for many, many years, it's been quite obvious to me, maybe to you, that the entertainment industry has been trying to purposely destroy our Christian values that we've lived with for 200 or 300 years in order for them to facilitate their lifestyle, which is totally unchristian, and they're getting away with it, and our...
Had to cut you off there because we are running out of time. Go ahead, Father Mark, your reaction to Paul's comments.
Well, thank you, Paul, for that question and for that comment. I don't know that it's particularly Hollywood. I think there is a general sense that that we can do it on our own, right? That we can, that we don't need community, that we don't need other people, that we can just do it on our own. And I think that's part of our sort of culture. It's pushed in a particularly far in a particular direction. We're very independent minded as a culture. We want to do things on our own. We don't always realize that we ought not, and that it's not always the best idea. We often, within this sense of you can do it yourself, and within that sense, there is an easy forgetting that we belong to other people, that we are part of various communities, and not only communities of faith, but also cultural communities, social communities, etc. So I don't necessarily blame Hollywood. I think that the church has, and I'm talking about the church sort of writ large, not not any particular denomination. I think the church has done a really good job on its own of leading to this sense of mistrust in a lot of people. We talked earlier about the abuse scandals that are not located just in the Roman Catholic Church. There is hypocrisy. There are people who go to their pastors for love, not for necessarily to be reconfirmed in their biases, that they go just to know that someone actually is there for them, that to care for them.
That cares about them, right?
Yeah, with various issues. And sometimes they receive from their pastors judgment.
And that turns people off.
That definitely turns people off.
All right,
off.
Father Mark, running out of time, but I do want to point out the two areas that did come up positive in in the polling. Two areas where clergy are still sought out by frequent attendees, and Father Mark, do you agree with that? Marriage and divorce,
yeah.
and advice on charitable giving. those areas.
Well,
I don't know about the charitable giving, but marriage and divorce, either. Certainly.
Yes, the part of what we do, of course, we do marriage counseling. Part of what we do is helping people discern, you know, their relationships. And that's really what we're meant to do, is to journey with people and to help them discern where the path of their life is taking.
All right. Father Mark Schultz. Thank you, Father Mark.
Thank you. It was good to be here.
Bill Buckmaster with you on behalf of Father Mark and Bob Dio, my engineer producer. Hope you have a great afternoon. Maybe we'll get some rain this afternoon. Be right back with you in 24 hours, less than 24 hours on Buckmaster.